Now the rest of the story. The First World War was over, but not for General John J. Blackjack Pershing. Not quite anyway, for General Pershing, who'd served as commander of all of the American forces during the war, believed that the American people, an ocean away, had been cheated out of an adventure. So old Blackjack decided to bring the war home, at least what was left of it, so that American citizens could see for themselves the sort of hardware that had been used by the Yanks in Europe. He proposed a convoy, a coast-to-coast military convoy, including the various equipment he used to defeat the Kaiser. Among the impressive military vehicles would be trucks and tanks, practically everything that had been employed by American soldiers in the war to end all wars. And the convoy was organized. And among the officers chosen to participate was a young lieutenant colonel, a tank commander who had served overseas. What this young man eagerly anticipated was a triumphant procession through a grateful land. But it turned out to be something quite other than that. The expedition began with a big send-off ceremony just south of the White House grounds. But once underway, the transcontinental convoy encountered innumerable difficulties. There were equipment failures requiring repairs. Many broken fan belts and disabled magnetos and sprung springs and obstinate ignitions. But the main trouble was the roads. The horrendous roads. There was no interstate highway system in 1919. So while the streets of American cities were mostly paved, what linked those cities together was mostly dirt. And day after day, the young lieutenant colonel shook his head, despairing over the hardships of transportation. The army vehicles were continually challenged by bridges, covered bridges that were too low for shop trucks, open bridges so unsafe that the convoy would have to make a lengthy detour, or sometimes even have to ford the river. And the roads that were often sent military equipment careening into ditches, or were so rutted that steering linkages became twisted out of shape. Surfaced roads were frequently not firm enough to bear the weight of the heavier vehicles. Much of the time, there were no roads at all. By journey's end in San Francisco, the convoy had been struggling its way across the country for 2 months, 62 days, averaging less than 10 miles an hour. So rugged was some of the terrain over which the convoy had passed that two vehicles were lost in transit, one of which had actually rolled down a mountain. And the young lieutenant colonel never, ever forgot that experience. In fact, he vowed that something must be done to create a highway system worthy of the 20th century. And one day he became president of the United States. And sure enough, he worked tirelessly, ceaselessly, vigorously to convince the Congress. And eventually he signed legislation establishing the interstate highway system. Today, the interstate is 97% complete. Only 1% of our nation's roads, it carries 20% of all of our nation's traffic. And on this, the 30th anniversary of the birth of the interstate, it's appropriate that we recall its inspiration, the frustration of a young lieutenant colonel in 1919, and the incredible 62-day snail's pace coast-to-coast convoy of Dwight D. Eisenhower. And now you know the rest of the story.